IRN USA Radio News.
Once there was a civilization, much like ours, but with a greater intelligence, greater powers, and a greater capacity for good.
Though you've been raised as a human being, you are not one of them.
Well, good evening, folks. Welcome to the Light of Day, coming to you on the Orion Talk Radio Network. We are live Saturday night, June 19th, 2010. Welcome to the Light of Day show. Well, tonight we're going to be joined by radio talk show host John Moore after the bottom of the hour break, and after the top of the hour break, going into the second hour, we'll be joined by returning guest Gilbert Erickson, who's been on the show two times before. We're going to get back into wormwood science and how it may be contributable to this oil sea, this undersea oil volcano that's been erupting in the Gulf of Mexico. I was just visiting NASA's website here a little while ago. I found something kind of interesting. I haven't put this out in my emails at all. I thought I'd read it for what it's worth. It's entitled, NASA Wants to Use a Web of GPS Sites to Predict Tsunamis. Now, there's been chatter on the internet that if this undersea oil volcano erupts, it could cause tsunamis anywhere from 20 to 80 feet high, and these tsunamis would hit the Gulf Coast at, 400 to 600 miles per hour. Anyway, here's the article. NASA researchers have successfully completed the first demonstration of a prototype tsunami prediction system using global and regional real-time data from hundreds of GPS sites. The system can quickly assess large earthquakes and accurately predict the size of resulting tsunamis. The new system, developed by Y. Tony Song and his colleagues at NASA's JPL, uses GPS data from NASA's Global Differential GPS and information about continental slope, that is where the ocean floor descends from the edge of the continent to the ocean bottom, to estimate the energy transferred to the ocean by an undersea earthquake. After the magnitude 8.8 quake in Chile on February 27th, Mr. Song's team successfully predicted the size of the resulting tsunami just minutes after the earthquake struck. The GPS network captured the ground motion data and relayed it to Mr. Song, enabling him to calculate the seafloor motions and accurately rank the tsunami source energy as moderate. That would have been 4.8 on the system's 10-point scale. Tsunami waves are most often generated by large undersea earthquakes greater than magnitude 7 on the Richter scale that result from the movement of oceanic and continental plates. When dense oceanic plates slide under lighter continental plates, the seafloor moves vertically, which allows a quick transfer of energy from the Earth to the ocean. because every earthquake is unique. Each tsunami exhibits different wavelengths, wave heights, and directionality, making tsunami forecasting a daunting task. This article goes on, but if anybody wants the entirety of it, please shoot me an email at gem3intucson@q.com, and I'll ship that over to you. Now, for those of us researchers that really know what's going on with this Planet X topic, there was a report that came out. I'm going to pull it up here in a second. NASA put this out on June 4th. This has been quite a bit of talk over this last week here. It's entitled, As the Sun Awakens, NASA Keeps a Wary Eye on Space Weather. Earth and space are about to come into contact in a way that's new to human history. To make preparations, authorities in Washington, D.C. are holding a meeting, the Space Weather Enterprise Forum, at the National Press Club on June 8th. That's already happened, folks. Richard Fisher, head of NASA's Heliophysics Division, explains what it's all about. Mr. Fisher, quote, the sun is waking up from a deep slumber, and in the next few years we expect to see much higher levels of solar activity. At the same time, our technological society has developed an unprecedented sensitivity to solar storms. The intersection of these two issues is what we're getting together to discuss. The National Academy of Sciences framed the problem 2 years ago, and by the way, folks, this was shown in Jesse Ventura's last episode that he did called Apocalypse 2012. Anyway, the National Academy of Sciences framed this problem 2 years ago in a landmark report entitled Severe Space Weather Events, Societal and Economic Impacts. It noted how people of the 21st century rely on high-tech systems for the basics of daily life. Smart power grids, GPS navigation, air travel, financial services, and emergency radio communications can all be knocked out by intense solar activity. A century-class solar storm, the Academy warned, could cause 20 times more economic damage than Hurricane Katrina. Now, I got to thinking about this, you know, how we rely on emergency radio communications in this age we live in. Well, keep in mind, when they transition the digital TV here in this country, maybe what they really wanted to do is fill up that bandwidth to deal with these coming earth catastrophes. That could be why they had to make room in the emergency services ban. So maybe that's why we really went to digital TV, or just maybe a part of the reason why. Anyway, this article goes on, but then again, on Monday of this week, a similar report was reissued, and on Tuesday, Matt Drudge carried a report on it, and then on Wednesday of this week, I was talking to John DiNardo, and they were warning about it again on the Weather Channel. But anyway, I got a little sound file I want to play here quick. This was reported on CNN about these solar storms that are coming, so I thought I'd play that quick.
Here is a massive burst of energy from the sun called a solar storm, and there's a couple different ways these things can happen. One of them involves basically a magnetic field, and what ultimately happens is a whole burst of light can shoot out, causing some problems. The even bigger ones that are solar storms, what they can do is even more. In addition to a burst of light, they can send out this massive junk, basically sun plasma, which can affect a lot of things. What can it affect? Well, first of all, think about what our world is doing today. We use satellites for almost everything. Our medical technology is linked to this. Our navigation systems for our airlines are connected to this. Communication systems, emergency communication systems, TV, internet, so many things use these satellites. If they're damaged, that can cause them some massive economic damage. As Kira was just saying, some experts saying 20 times beyond what Katrina faces, but it doesn't end there. If there were an electromagnetic problem, a real burst from the sun, that can affect us all the way down here on Earth. It can actually knock out some electric grids, as some smaller storms have done in the past. So what scientists are doing today is talking about what can be changed to watch out for this. Let's go to this video. I want you to see this. This is from April. And I want, as we're looking at this, I want to tell you the exact words that NASA put along with this. From April 19, 2010, this was an observation of one of the most massive eruptions in years. They said Earth was not in the line of fire this time. That's their words, not in the line of fire this time. So what are the stakes here? Let's come back to my screen. I want you to see some information. First of all, this is a quote that I have for you. NASA official here who is a head of the heliophysics department watches out for the sun. The sun is waking up, he says, from a deep slumber. Richard Fisher, take a look at this now here. The cost could reach $2 trillion in 1 year if there were one of these huge storms. This is according to a National Science Foundation study funded by NASA, and that study is the one saying the economic impact in that sense could be 20 times greater than what happened in Hurricane Katrina.
Okay, so there's that sound file. I thought I'd just play that for what it's worth. That's some reporter on CNN talking about this solar storm that could be coming our way. Keep in mind, they show this in the movie Knowing, which was released last year, and you know, they also show that oil rig exploding in the Gulf on that movie Knowing. So if they got that right, I wonder if the cataclysmic solar scorching showing on that movie will also occur. We have a lot to worry about if these solar storms get severe enough. Anyway, if these solar storms get severe enough, folks, this is what we could be facing. I wrote a detailed list out here. We could be facing widespread power blackouts. Now, this would mean no food, no gas, no trucks running, no water pressure. We'd be getting no water out of the tap, in other words. Our sewage treatment system would be in chaos, and our bathroom would become a biological disaster zone. There'd be no social services. There'd be no television for people to watch. Well, that'd be very unfortunate for the sheeple out there. There'd be no air conditioning, no refrigerators, no furnaces. There'd be severe air travel disruptions. Our GPS navigational systems and major satellites would stop working. There'd be catastrophic consequences for the world's health and emergency services. Hospital equipment would be damaged, as well as banking systems. Air traffic control devices would be damaged. Home computers, iPods, satellite navigations, and mobile phones would be damaged. The EMP blast from the solar storm would fry cars' microchips, and it would literally become a Mad Max scenario within 3 days if these solar storms got bad enough. I was replaying yesterday's NutriMedical report. With Dr. Bill Deagle, he had John Moore and Ann Morrison on there as a guest yesterday, and he mentioned an article that was put out by the Huffington Post, a very, very mainstream, recognized a source of information. And I called John up today, and I asked him to forward past that email on to me that he emailed to Dr. Deagle, and I'm just going to find it here quick. Here it is. John Moore's email is entitled Planet X Mainstream Coverage. Here it is. He says, "Ladies and gentlemen, I believe most would consider the Huffington Post to be a mainstream news source. I forward this story for those who still need some convincing. I found this article in the mainstream media on HuffingtonPost.com. It was posted on June 16th. So that would have been, what, 3 days ago. They admit that an incoming brown dwarf star is having an impact on our atmosphere. This is the first mainstream media admission of the existence of Planet X that I have seen." Now, I'm going to ask John about that, because I'm sure he's seen other mainstream sources on this, like the infamous Washington Times and New York Post stuff that was put out back in the early 80s. Anyway, he goes on, this is what the article states. "Why the sudden commotion? Question mark. This is four paragraphs into this article, folks. "Some scientists believe an incoming brown dwarf star, several times the mass of Jupiter, is responsible for disrupting our solar system's heliosphere." You folks might want to investigate the heliosphere, because that goes out quite a long ways. I think it even goes past the orbit of Pluto. "The brown dwarf has disturbed Pluto's orbit. It is also disturbing the orbit of Jupiter and the rest of the celestial bodies in our solar system. The sun is emitting coronal mass ejections during the last few months that are having a significant impact on the Earth's geomagnetic axis and electromagnetic field." You can find this article at, and he gives the full link here, full link, if anybody wants it shoot me an email and I'll ship it over to you. Regards, John Moore. Now, for those folks out there that would say, oh, this is just a psyops, you'd figure they'd be leaking it out all over the place, but you kind of have to go looking for these things, folks. I mean, this was just passively mentioned passively here in four paragraphs into this article. You know, it ain't like we have all the talk show hosts in the alternative research community talking about Planet X. I mean, I'm worried about the stuff that ain't being discussed. This is one reason I'm so glued to this topic. Based upon the high credentials that John Moore carries, he really woke me up to this, and I find a lot of weight that Planet X is a reality and that it is, in fact, inbound, regardless of what Professor Jim McCanney thinks. Like Professor McCanney stated on John Moore's show about two or three Sundays ago, Professor McCanney admits himself he doesn't have access to all the sources that John Moore does. So, and I was listening to Professor McCanney's show from Thursday night, and he said about, you know, talking about this severe solar storm, these severe solar storms that could be coming. McCanney says, well, yeah, they're gonna hyperbolize and overinflate that story a little bit just so they can get funding, because, you know, like NOAA and things like that are splinter groups of NASA, and if, you know, if there's nothing going on in the sun, they might not get the funding they need, according to McCanney. But I'd like to interject by saying that if Professor McCanney doesn't want to talk about a single Planet X object coming in because he doesn't have concrete scientific evidence, well, then he can just think that way about it. That's his opinion on it. I believe, as John Moore does, that there is a single Planet X object inbound and incoming, if you will. And Gilbert here, my guest Gilbert Erickson, is going to elaborate more on this as we get into the second hour here tonight. You're listening to The Light of Day. We're live Saturday night, June 19th, 2010. Still wanted to read an email that Gilbert Erickson sent me here tonight in regards to this Huffington Post article I just read you folks about Planet X goes mainstream. He says, Sheldon, this one is interesting since Huffington Post is a little bit more mainstream than the rest of the Planet X sources. A good question is, why are the Huffington people the ones to start letting the Planet X cat out of the bag at this point in time? They don't have to do it, so why are they doing it? He gives me a current planet chart and an ephemeris, and he points out that that the Earth will be right on ascension 18 on June 21st. So we could be experiencing some very severe weather on or around that date. Because I believe from a past interview Gilbert did, he mentions that Wormwood aligns itself up in some manner with our winter and summer solstice, and as you folks know, the summer solstice would be June 21st. But we'll get into more of that when we bring Gilbert on. Oh yeah, folks, Professor McCanney warned about some microbursts that on his Thursday night show that would be happening in certain parts of our country the following day, Friday. And indeed, there were some violent weather outbursts. Now, this is my opinion. McCanney doesn't want to connect the solar storms with Planet X, probably because he no longer promotes the reality that there's one Planet X object inbound and being tracked. But me and John DiNardo concur that Planet X is a causative factor in the increased solar activity as X closes in onto our sun. McCanney is correct that most Earth weather is caused by the sun, another one of the biggest secrets being withheld from the masses, I must admit, folks. These lies are peddled down to what he calls the Tier 2 and Tier 3 meteorologists. Illinois and Michigan received Category 1 hurricane force winds last night, and this, I believe, is caused by severe activity that's been going on the sun. Kane County, Illinois had gusts of 75 miles per hour in the Elburn area yesterday. Anyway, we're going to be going in the break here in about a minute or so. I'm going to be calling John Moore at the bottom of the hour break, and we'll bring him online. Pretty hot out here in the Sonora Desert. We've been hitting anywhere from 102 to 105 Fahrenheit. I went to the swimming pool today. Been getting pretty hot out here. Anyway, we'll be going in the break here in a minute or two. If be joined by John Moore after we come out of the break. Anyway, there's the break. Sorry for the silence there. I'm just kind of blank. But anyway, you're listening to The Light of Day. We'll be back in a few minutes. You're listening to The Light of Day with Sheldon Day. Stay tuned.
Speech guaranteed. You're listening to the Orion Talk Radio Network. The Orion Talk Radio Network is here. The First Amendment of the Constitution grants us freedom of speech. That's the freedom to express our views and opinions without censorship. If you listen to mainstream radio at all, you'll notice that free speech is pretty hard to find these days, with just a handful of networks offering programs that dare to discuss topics and issues that have a profound impact on our daily lives. The mainstream media simply lies by omission and distortion of the facts. The Orion Talk Radio Network is committed to bringing you entertaining and thought-provoking programming that dares to tell the truth. And you can help us as we grow our network. If you think you have what it takes to host a show, you know of someone interested in hosting a show, or any other suggestions, comments, or questions, please drop us an email at OrionTalkRadio@gmail.com. That's OrionTalkRadio@gmail.com. And thank you for listening to the Orion Talk Radio Network.
NASA discovered, and were very excited about having found this, what they term Planet X. X is the Roman numeral for the number 10, meaning the 10th planet in the universe. They were very excited to discover it on December 31st, the year 1983. But suddenly, the chief scientist of the infrared astronomical satellite system that sent this thing into deep space, and they sent back pictures of it, and they released it to six of the top daily newspapers around the world. Suddenly the government came in, started putting a lid on all this information. But now we find out, just on the week of January 7th, the year 2002, that all of a sudden they're squashing all of this information and keeping it from the public. They said that it was an asteroid when finally they began to admit that it was there. But now in Newsweek magazine, they actually show it with a reflection, because now any astronomer on Earth can get a picture of it. And so, the year 2002, January 7th, they finally admitted there is another planet, and it's heading toward the Earth, between the Earth and between the Sun, and it will displace the gravity of the Sun temporarily as it passes by, just as it did in the days of Peleg. Only the largest control telescopes that have been controlled by the government for years seen Planet X until, I just mentioned, they admitted that it is a real planet, January 7th, 2002. But they began to see it in 2001. It was easy to cover it up until then. But then, all of a sudden, in the year 2001, small to mid-level observatories, such as the Lowell Observatory in Arizona, one in South America, one in Switzerland, began to see that there was something there, and it was moving. And according to their calculations, it was heading toward our solar system because it had orbited out of our solar system. Occasionally, you would expect, with such an overwhelmingly important worldwide story, some of the details will be let out somewhere at some time. They have been. One of the headlines was massive population shrinkage. They also wondered out loud, and it was recorded on microphone during one of their, what we would term in Britain, a parliamentary session, or in a congressional session in the United States. It's a Politburo session in Russia. They even wondered if their nation would even exist anymore at all. Government officials, you can be sure, can be trusted to protect none of us. They won't even release this information. They will not try to protect any of us because they know they can't. But they started a mysterious building program underground, and at least 129 underground facilities from one end of the country to the other has been completed. We always thought that it was in case of a nuclear weapon, but we found out that it's not. It's in case Planet X comes our way. We need to understand how and why and when the Earth's surface is going to change so abruptly, and it will fulfill in great detail every single item of the Bible, the scriptures that I'll show you. Some of this information came off the wire service of ABC News in the year 2000. Others of it came from BBC talking about a planet beyond Pluto heading this way. There's absolutely nothing that anyone can do about it. They're actually talking that the population of this world could be reduced by 90%. Does that sound logical to anyone? Could it be? If 90% of the population is going to die when this planet comes into this atmosphere or into our orbital structure, and all the planet begins to shift, whole land masses sink, others rise.
Anyway, folks, there's one of my sound bites. We got John Moore on the line here. Hello, John, you there?
Good evening, Shelley. Good to be with you.
Hey, I was earlier on in the show here, I was reading your email that you put out, and in this article on the Huffington Post one, you said that this is the first mainstream media admission of the existence of Planet X that I have seen. I'd like to comment on that by stating, there haven't you seen the other mainstream sources that put this out back in the early 80s?
Right. Well, I think if you read my email more accurately, I do say it is a mainstream source. These things come out about once a year, Sheldon. We see a slip of the tongue. And you're right, back in the early 80s, New York Times and some other publications did mention the 10th planet. But it's a rare occasion to get an actual mainstream media admittance like this.
Yeah, it sure is. And for those folks out there that tend to think this is just a psyops or whatever, you have to go looking for these things. It ain't like every talk show host in the alternative research community is even talking about this.
Well, there's plenty of topics to talk about, and this one doesn't get a whole lot of attention, you're right.
Yeah. Anyway, I also, this caught my attention before the show started. I thought I'd share this with you. I found this this article entitled, NASA Wants to Use a Web of GPS Sites to Predict Tsunamis. Now, there's chatter that we could be seeing 20 to 80 foot tall tsunamis hitting the Gulf and Florida there if this undersea oil volcano goes off, and I thought I'd just share that with you.
Yeah. Well, it's a very serious situation, and the extremes are very serious as to what could happen down there with tsunamis and poisonous gas and oil, of course. I think if I had any friends or relatives down there, I'd be on the phone with them offering them to come up and stay with me for maybe forever. It may be that bad. It may be a generations before that Gulf Coast is ever can be inhabitable again.
Yeah, I heard on Frank Whalen's show the other morning, there's already people getting headaches up to 300 miles inland, and I seen this video clip of all this crop damage going on somewhere in Tennessee. This could be connected to the stuff they're spraying already.
Well, I hope not. That's fairly far inland, to say the least, and I truly hope that's not the case. I guess we'll find out, won't we?
Yeah, time will tell, that's for sure. Hey, you're working on a second edition to your global warming video. Can you tell folks how that's progressing along?
Well, I talked to my editor tonight, and we did discussions about one of the things that we're working on there. Of course, my DVD is Global Warming, What the Government Isn't Telling You. And the update is in the works. And in the meantime, we're selling the original one, and it'll be a two DVD set, and I'll offer the new DVD at a deep discount for people who already have the first one.
All right, sounds good. I've been talking to John DiNardo quite a bit lately, and I really appreciate you for hooking me up with him. We've become really close friends, and he said that your idea of promoting that people go get cracked corn could be a sort of a bad advice.
I did do that at one time. I'm now suggesting other grains. There's too much chance that corn could be genetically modified. And in fact, more likely it would be, unless you know it's from an organic source. But other grains like wheat and spelt and oats would be a good way to store up a lot of food for a very economical price.
All right. John was also saying you suggest people go out and buy a bus for $5,000. He was telling me today that thing could become a solar oven for people, and with these 300-mile-an-hour winds we could be facing, that would just topple that thing over like tumbleweed on the Kansas plains, a bus.
Well, there's ways to deal with that, too. A bus serves a lot of purposes. First of all, if it's a diesel bus, it'll have at least a 100-amp alternator to make electricity. And a bus is a truck. Now, these people down here in the Gulf States, for example, if they had a school bus, they could load up all their important things, clothing, photographs, and so forth, tools, and load up the family and leave in the bus. Now, granted, any structure above ground, except maybe a thin-shelled concrete dome home, is going to not do well in 200-mile-an-hour winds. However, if you've got a backhoe, you can easily dig a trench and then back up the school bus into the trench, and the wind would just blow over the top of it. So there's ways to deal with everything, Sheldon.
I see. I thought I'd just share it with you because it's something that bothers John DiNardo, and we're a team here, and I want to make sure we're all on the same page.
Sure, sure.
So.
No problem. Yeah. Well, people are going to need heavy transport to, I was talking about this on one of my shows the other day. These U-Haul truck and trailer places, they typically don't carry that many trucks and trailers in their average inventory. And people in these Gulf States are thinking, well, I'll just go down to the local U-Haul place and get a truck. Well, they may end up having to drive 75 or 100 miles to get a truck, if they can even get one. I'm sure that people are, in fact, I have consultation clients who are already making their plans to get away from there as soon as they can, So I'm sure there's many others, probably hundreds of others, that are making plans to at least get the wife and kids kids out, maybe the dad will stay behind and keep working and get the wife and kids up to, you know, Aunt Mabel's house up in New Jersey or whatever, while the dad stays behind and continues working and paying the mortgage until it doesn't make sense to do that anymore, or he gets forcibly evacuated.
Yeah, I got to thinking, John, you know, I uncovered that NASA contract where they relocated their people, and sure enough, there's three or four NASA facilities along the Gulf Coast, plus the Kennedy Space Center in Florida, and now we got Richard Hoagland on Coast to Coast hinting at tsunamis that could be hitting that area, so that just makes sense in itself why NASA might have issued that contract to Prudential.
Well, of course, what you and I are talking about is the relocation contract. A lot of listeners aren't aware of the $74 million to relocate NASA employees over a two-year period of time. I doubt that they had any kind of forewarning of what we're going through now. Their forewarning would be more along the lines of rising ocean levels due to the 10th planet. If there was any contrivance of this oil spill, I doubt that NASA knew about it 3 years ago.
Wow. Okay.
Well, you know, it's there is some possibility that what happened in the Gulf was contrived, but that the plans for that would have been kept inside British Petroleum. You know, that NASA contract that you found, that goes back to, what, 07, I believe?
Yeah, it was issued August 1st, 07, yep.
Right. Well, that'll be 3 years ago this August. You know, the likelihood of NASA having that kind of prior knowledge is pretty slim, I would say. But they were making plans based on their knowledge of what will be happening with the 10th planet and rising ocean levels. That's just a smart thing to do, isn't it?
It sure would be. Hey, by the way, I got an update. You remember, this must have been, I don't know, two to three months ago. I told you that I had sent a FOIA request to NASA headquarters in Washington, D.C. about this new edict that was issued to hush up all incoming space rock data.
Right.
Well, I was shocked to get a call from Ames Research Center in California yesterday morning. Some lady told me that my FOIA request had been forwarded to their facility, and she was going to try to find out what she could on that.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, the government bureaucrats are earning their paychecks, aren't they?
Yeah.
Well, that's, I didn't expect you to hear anything about that.
Oh, I never did either.
Yeah. Well, we'll just be on standby to hear what happens there. Well, if people do want my DVD, I got a toll-free number that they can get that at, Sheldon. That's 800-592-9543, and that's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Very nice people, a family-owned business in St. Louis, takes these orders for me.
Yeah, folks, and I've seen the video myself. It's quite impressive. It really woke me up. You've really changed my life, John, with this Planet X thing. It's just really taken me down into a different paradigm right now.
Well, I guess that's a good thing. I don't know. Sometimes we wish we weren't woke up when we find out how serious these things are. But that's good. Well, the title of the DVD is Global Warming, What the Government Isn't Telling You. I had some lady post something on YouTube. She watched a 10-minute clip, and she said about me that I'm an actor. I'll take that as a compliment. I never thought of myself. Well, we got a lot of issues before us here, Sheldon, and I always advise people to do their own homework, to become a student of Professor McCanny, and read some good books. Read Velikovsky's books, read McCanny's books. I've got links to McCanny's website from my website, thelibertyman.com. And Emmanuel Velikovsky is one of our heroes, all of us that are involved in this research. And the books he wrote back in the 50s and 60s were very, very important to everything that we do. So people should be doing their own homework, doing their own research, and convincing themselves. Don't you agree?
Oh, most definitely. Yeah.
So, anyway, have you had Jason Rand on your show yet?
Yeah, I have, just one time. I know Frank Wayland has also carried him. He's also been on Coast to Coast.
Yeah, I've had him on my show as well. One of the things I like about Dr. Rand's book is he did not get it caught up in that 2012 date. Although he's associated with people who are, he didn't put that in his book, and I complimented him on that because that's just going to get a lot of people hurt. This December 21st, 2012 Mayan calendar stuff is just going to get a whole lot of people hurt because they won't prepare in time. We may have a year if we're lucky, and I'm not even sure about that, Sheldon.
Yeah, you know, it's John DiNardo and Gilbert Erickson, they also look up to Jason Rand in their research, so he is apparently quite an authoritative figure in this topic.
Well, he's a researcher. He pulled together a lot of documents and so forth from many, many different sources. He doesn't do original research like Dr. McCanley does, but he's a good writer and a good author and a good researcher, and he pulled together just many sources from science, from the indigenous peoples and their stories that they've got from thousands of years ago, and their prophecies of the future, and he put it all together in his book titled The Return of Planet X.
Yeah, it's one book I don't have, but I know John DiNardo has been reading it, and he really likes it.
Well, one of the things about being a radio talk show host is when you ask for the interview, you can also ask for a review copy of the book.
Oh, yeah.
That's part of it. So just give you a little bit of an education here, Sheldon. That, you know, being a radio talk show host, you get review copies of DVDs and books. And that's the way this business works.
Yeah, actually, the last review copy of a book I got from a person I had on my show, believe it or not, was Jerry E. Smith. He had this book out about HAARP, and, well, he just died now a few months ago.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Okay, which book was his?
It's called, what is it called? Weather Warfare, The Military's Plan, The Draft Mother Nature, I think it's called.
Okay. Yeah, the one I wrote was Angels Don't Play This HAARP. I guess that was by a different author. Well, I'm sorry to hear that Jerry died.
Yeah, he's one of the frontier researchers and public mouthpieces on this issue of HAARP modifying the weather. But you know, that kind of gets to be a fuzzy issue too, because me and you, we tend to think that Planet X is causing most of the weather altering events versus weather warfare stuff, right?
Well, there's some of each. There was a hurricane, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, down in the Gulf of Mexico. It did a loop-de-loop, which nobody had ever seen a hurricane do that, where it went up in 360-degree circle and did a complete loop-de-loop. It sort of looked like a golf club kind of a shape sticking up there in the Gulf. McCanney was convinced that that was weather manipulation, that particular loop-de-loop. So it's a mixed bag, Sheldon, and unless you're at the control room where they control HAARP, it's really difficult to tell what's going on because of the 10th planet, what's happening from natural causes, and what's happening due to man-made manipulation.
How convinced are you that Planet X is tugging at this undersea oil volcano in the Gulf?
I don't have any knowledge of that specifically. Mm-hmm. That's really, if anybody's got instrumentation that can tell, you know, the moon, for example, tugs at the entire oceans, and we know that happens every 24 hours. So the moon itself would be tugging at any large pool of liquid, just like it does the oceans. And would the 10th planet be doing it? Well, if it's close enough, it probably would be.
Well, I do know a few weeks before this oil rig went down, the Coral Sea down there northeast of Australia, the seabed floor was rising like 13 feet a day or 13 feet a week. I can't remember the exact figure on that, but that could just be another, you know, Wormwood signature event.
Well, it could be. And once again, without really knowing, you know, we're speculating because we know the possibilities, and the possibilities do include these types of events.
Well, here's another, it's always lingering on my chest, but, you know, Jim, Professor McCanney does not think there's a single inbound, incoming Planet X object at this time, but me and you, we definitely think that. So,
well, McCanney is an astrophysicist, and you know, he knows things that, and understands things in a different way than we do, and he refers to many different Planet X objects, and he doesn't say it is an inbound. It's kind of a misquote. He does say that there's many Planet X type objects, and Planet X is kind of an astronomical term that it covers a lot of different objects. And the terms can be confusing because Planet X is one thing, and X and Roman numeral 10 are the same symbol. So when you and I refer to the 10th planet, it's not necessarily one of the many 10. It is one of the many Planet X's to try to give some clarification here. But McCanny has put in his books that yes, the 10th planet is on an orbit that takes it past through our solar system, which would make it inbound. He says he does not know where it is, and I don't know where it is either. NASA knows very well. They've been watching it since 1979, but they're very tight-lipped about where it is.
But the circumstantial evidence would seem to suggest that it's out between the asteroid belt and Jupiter right now, correct?
I don't have that information. No, it may be, but I don't have that information.
Okay. And by the way, folks, Planet X is not a planet. It is a brown dwarf star bigger than the size of Jupiter, correct, John?
Well, I've heard it called both things. And a brown dwarf star is a star that didn't have quite the energy to take off and become a star. And any object that's on an orbit like this object is called a planet because of the object and because of the orbit that it's in. So I don't see why it couldn't be both. A brown dwarf star that's on a planetary orbit. I don't see any reason why one excludes the other.
Well, I've also heard that the planet Nibiru could be a planet surrounding this brown dwarf star.
A planet surrounding it?
Yeah, could be a planet surrounding the brown dwarf star. Anyway, John, we're at the end of the first hour, so thanks.
All right. Well, it's good to be with you here, Sheldon, and enjoy the rest of the show.
Thanks, John. Thanks for coming on board.
Thank you.
Have
You're
a good
welcome.
Night.
All right.
Okay, folks, there's a break. We'll be back to listen to The Light of Day on Orion. Stay tuned.
Orion Talk Radio Network is here. The First Amendment of the Constitution grants us freedom of speech. That's the freedom to express our views and opinions without censorship. If you listen to mainstream radio at all, you'll notice that free speech is pretty hard to find these days, with just a handful of networks offering programs that dare to discuss topics and issues that have a profound impact on our daily lives. The mainstream media simply lies by omission and distortion of the facts. The Orion Talk Radio Network is committed to bringing you entertaining and thought-provoking programming that dares to tell the truth. And you can help us as we grow our network. If you think you have what it takes to host a show, you know of someone interested in hosting a show, or any other suggestions, comments, or questions, please drop us an email at OrionTalkRadio@gmail.com. That's OrionTalkRadio@gmail.com. And thank you for listening to the Orion Talk Radio Network. We have more listeners than the big boys' HD2 channels. This is Micro 1650 AM, Tonawanda, New York.